I'm Heather McDonald, and the title of this session is Don't Take It for Granted, or Granite, Geology, a Different Way of Seeing. And I'm a geologist, and geology is a study of the earth, as I'm sure most of you know. And there are lots of different ways that geologists study the earth. There are people that might explore for different economic deposits, such as those that probably found the ore deposit that was mined here. And there are people that study the inside of the earth, looking at earthquakes and things like that. But what I want to do today is talk about one part of the earth that geologists study quite a bit, and that's rocks and minerals. So looking at the materials that make up the surface of the earth and then down a ways too. And what I want you to sort of remember is that what we're doing in geologists, and what you can do too, is ask questions. And that ask questions of the rocks as well as ask questions of other people. And so you can say, well, what do I see? And I think all of you, if you went outside and looked at the rocks that are built up around here, you could say, well, I can describe this in a certain way. And you might have different levels of vocabulary to do that. But you can ask that question, and you can answer it at some level. So, and that's what geologists do who study like the rocks and minerals. They say, what do I see? And then they describe it. So they're looking, they're observing things. And then we take it a step farther. We want to say, well, what does that mean? Like, what does it mean about the origin of that rock? Or what does that tell us about the history of the earth? Or how did it form? What conditions did it form under? And so really that's what I'll be trying to focus on today, is working with you to look at what are some questions you can ask about rocks and minerals, and then what are some of the ways that you can answer some of those at different levels. Now this is just, you know, a real short view of that, and you can really imagine, I think, that you can expand that. But this is really one of the basics. So I have samples set out, and there are more people here now. So why don't you see if you can get in a group with, it looks like maybe two people in a group, and get a tray of samples. And I have a couple more here. I also have to get where the light is. Here's another. Does everybody have one? Because I have a couple more trays.
Oh.
Okay.
Can you get in here?
Okay, now what these are, this is mostly a collection of different minerals. And minerals are the components of rocks. A rock is an aggregate of one or more minerals. So really, in order to look at rocks and to understand them, you need to know something about what makes them up. And minerals are what make them up. So a mineral, and you don't really need to know the definition of a mineral, but what you do need to know is that for a given mineral, say quartz, which many of you may have heard of, it's a fairly common mineral, that has certain properties in terms of its chemical composition and also the way the atoms are stacked together. And those two properties are the same, or pretty much the same, in every single sample of quartz. And so what that does is mean when you look at, and you all have different samples of the mineral quartz, they're all different in some way, but they also share certain properties. Like quartz is really hard, for example. And so even if all the different kinds of quartz you have look different, they all are very hard. Okay, and they also all have a similar composition. But what I want you to do is look at the minerals. There are about three or four, or maybe some of you have five that are white or clear. And so maybe just pull those out and look at them, and I'll do the same with the samples I have. And think of how you could, you know, just looking at these, you don't even know what minerals these are, how you could tell them apart. Like what's a way that you would describe one and distinguish it from another one? Okay, what are you saying? I think
they look like plastic.
Okay, one looks like plastic. Now, did y'all see which one she means? It's the one that's really flat and kind of flat. I mean, that describes it. Yeah. Right, okay, and those are two different names for that same mineral. One is mica, and that's a general name for minerals that are flat like this. And isinglass is another that I never heard in school, but my mother told me.
That's what we used to call it.
Yeah.
Before plastic was ever heard of.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And what I've heard, I don't know, but is that they used to use this mineral because of its properties. It's kind of clear and it's flat. They used to use it for windows.
Right.
Yes. So, especially in cars.
In cars, yeah.
Oh, really? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
no,
yeah, cars.
Really?
Yeah. Isinglass windows on the car.
Yeah. Now, what's neat?
Isinglass.
Isin?
It's spelled
I guess.
The old touring cars used to have them.
Yes. Yeah.
Snap them in place.
Factory. So they're ready to put them
out. My girlfriend's father had an old Buick train.
See you at
Now, what's neat about this is this mineral is flat that way because of its properties, because of the internal structure. So the way the atoms are stacked together, they're actually sheets of minerals, and they're stacked, or not minerals, of atoms, they're stacked right on top of each other. And so that means that it will break in those flat sheets. Okay? Now, let's just look in your tray for a minute, and you'll see another kind of mica. Do y'all see there? Do you see which one I'm thinking about? The other one that's flat, so it shares a similar property in that. Right. And both of these are different kinds of mica. And I'll just tell you, you don't need to remember these, but I'll just give these different names. The white one's muscovite, and the other one's, the dark one's biotite. But for what you need to know, think of mica and know that mica comes in different forms. So sometimes it's clear, sometimes it's dark. There's another kind of mica that's purple. And when you go outside after this session, look at the rocks, and I bet you'll find some samples of one or two of these minerals, of these particular ones. Okay, now what about the other clear ones, going back to that? What do you...
There's one with a sheen on it, like a diamond almost.
Okay.
A glitter.
Crystalline.
Yeah. Now some people have samples where it is a crystal shape. And others of you don't. I didn't have enough to go around. Some of you, and this is, it's got that really shiny surface. And that's a characteristic feature of the mineral quartz, which is a really common mineral.
Six-sided.
Right, and that reflects, again, that internal structure, or the way the atoms are stacked together. So it's a hexagon, really. Now, some of you have actually two samples of quartz in your tray, and some of you just have one. Now, what you all also could see, and maybe you want to pass like one of your samples to another group so you can share. Some people have quartz that's clear, and some people have quartz that's other colors. Like some of you have pink quartz, rose quartz, and some of you have something that actually is kind of grayish. And that's called smoky quartz, like that. That's what it looks like.
How can you tell it's quartz?
That's a good question. And one way geologists would tell us, think of the other possibilities, and one is a very hard. Yeah, I didn't bring like a knife in with me, but this would scratch glass.
It would?
Yeah. Don't try it.
Your glasses in.
Don't do it.
I don't need
it's
okay.
Fine.
You're bad enough anyhow.
That's one like real characteristic feature of quartz. Another is it's really shiny. And the third is the way it breaks. And it breaks kind of irregular, in an irregular fashion.
Okay. Is this quartz? It
looks like no, that one, now look how, describe how that one breaks. What's the shape of that?
Okay, that's why I'm wondering, it's rectangular.
Right.
So it's not pointed or...
Right, and that's a really clear distinction. That mineral, and this is one of my, I have lots of favorite minerals, this mineral that looks like little cubes or rectangles, breaks that way. If I had a hammer and I broke it into smaller pieces, it would still break into little cubes. Uh-huh. And quartz won't do that. Quartz just breaks real irregularly. And so what you do if you have like a whole session on minerals, you learn what are the key or diagnostic properties of a mineral.
Take a hammer and try to break it.
Sure, or you look at the samples. Look at, do you have one that's a crystal shape? Look on the bottom of it and look at how that broke. See, it's not flat at all. It's just kind of a curvy surface. So you look at the surfaces and you see how it's just irregular. It breaks like glass. You know, if you have a glass bottle and you look how that breaks sometimes, it's real conchoidal almost. Now, she asked me what this other mineral is. And this one, I bet you don't have to do this if you don't want to, but if you taste it.
Salt?
Yeah, taste, put your, yeah, taste
the
it.
The square one?
The square one, taste it.
You just put salt. Your,
I know. Now what do you think would be a diagnostic property of this mineral? If you taste it, it would taste salty. And there aren't other minerals that do that.
Well, are there other minerals that are dangerous to taste?
Oh, yeah. And what you have to be careful with is this looks very similar to a mineral that a diagnostic test for it is to put hydrochloric acid on it and make it bubble. It bubbles when you do that. So that's a diagnostic test for that particular mineral. So you don't want to go around indiscriminately tasting these because... You know, you might taste hydrochloric acid, which really wouldn't harm you, but you don't want to do it a lot. And actually, if you want to, there's another way you can distinguish those two minerals, and it depends on how they break, too. I just didn't put that in the collection that you have.
Okay.
So, that one is called halite, but call it rock salt. That's perfectly a good name for it.
That's what the deer like, huh?
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So now remember that halite or rock salt breaks into little cubes, because I'm going to show you something later that's interesting. Okay, now that's not a really common mineral, but it's just kind of neat, so I put that in. Now you also, some of you have, I think all of you have a lighter colored mineral. That's some of it's sort of pink, sometimes it's salmon colored, sometimes it's white, and sometimes it's a little faint blue. Okay, if you look at that one, you see how it's sort of rectangular, but it's not quite as cubic as the halite was. I think I see the one what I can see. It looks like you're picking up the right one.
Mine says 18.
Mine says 5.
Mine says 2. Mine says 5. Yeah, five. No, this one's quartz because it breaks really regularly. This one.
This one breaks.
See, yeah, it's smooth on that surface. It's smooth on that surface. When you look at it, it's really good in the side. What's the name of it?
Okay, now that one is a really common mineral. That is the most common mineral there is. There's 60% of the rocks are made of that mineral. And that mineral is called feldspar. Okay, and feldspar is really a family of different minerals. But just think of feldspar. And so think of how you could tell that apart from quartz. It breaks along some flat surfaces, whereas quartz breaks really regularly. Okay? Now quartz and feldspar are really, really common minerals. So those are minerals you want to keep in your mind. And
feldspar, you said quartz, okay, Dan has a joke for you. He's going to tell you.
When you have a rock, you only take it for granted if it has quartz and feldspar in it.
That's true. That's
and
true.
Biotite,
right.
Is that what granite is?
Uh-huh. And I'm going to show you some granite, okay?
My grandfather used to sell monuments, so I used to play with his samples.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let's kind of shift on. The other samples I have look sort of metallic. Do you see those? And I put these in because this is an area where things have been mined and they have metallic minerals in them. And one of them looks really shiny. It looks like gold.
Yeah.
So it's called fool's gold, or the geologist's name for it is pyrite. And it's an iron sulfide. The other mineral is another one of my very favorite minerals, and it's real shiny silver. Uh-huh. And even if you have a real tiny piece, feel it. Doesn't it feel a little bit heavy? Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think might be in that? What's something that's real heavy?
Lead.
This is a lead sulfide. And this is, it's a mineral that they use to mine for lead. And look at that, too, and you see how it's real cubic again? Uh-huh. So it breaks the same way that rock salt does. Okay? Now what I have, and the light's really not good enough in here to see this, but a lot of people think that fool's gold is gold. And so I was at a meeting and I found I could buy some gold. And so I had a little tube and it's got some gold flakes in it. So I'll pass that around and it looks looks quite different from the pyrite in really good light. And this is a little bit dim, but I'll still pass around and you can see what real gold looks like.
You trust this, don't you?
Yeah,
absolutely,
say.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, There are these different minerals, and they have these different properties. And what we want to look at is look at them in rocks and how they appear in rocks. So it's usually a little bit harder to tell the minerals in rocks, but I think you'll be able to do this. So why don't you take one of the samples out of that bag, and I'll pass these around.
You're going to tell us how they were formed, too, aren't you?
Yeah, that's what it's coming to. Now, this is the rock that Dan already told you about. Granite. Okay. So, feldspar and quartz. Okay, granite. Yeah. Now, y'all have different samples, and some of them look a little bit different from each other, but what is common to all of them is that they have both quartz and feldspar in it. And see if you can pick out the one, like a sort of gray mineral that kind of breaks irregularly, has an irregular shape to it. Do you see that? If someone doesn't, like, raise your hand and I'll come by and look at it.
In our sample?
Yeah, in your sample.
And does anyone do a sample?
No.
Breaks irregularly. Well, is it the gray?
It looks sort of gray, and the other ones look. Oh, sorry. Let me. It's almost translucent. It looks like you can see into it. Now I'm going to give you something that may help you to see this. And remember, I was saying in the beginning that geology is a different way of seeing. I think already you look at rocks differently. But geologists don't just use they use their eyes a lot. To look at rocks, but sometimes they need help. And so what they usually carry with them are hand lens, like this.
And hammers.
And hammers, too, to break open rocks to look at a fresh surface.
But what is that you've got in
there? Well, it's called a hand lens. And I have some. I don't have enough for everyone. Hey. Now, let me tell you how you use these. They're just like little magnifying glasses, really. But what you do is hold them next to your eye, and then you real close to your eye, and then bring the rock up until it's in focus. Now, this works better when the light's better. Okay? You have to take it out of the box and then look at it. Right, it is granite because it's got quartz in it and it has feldspar in it. Okay, now how many of you think you can pick out, even if you can't pick out which is quartz and which is feldspar, can you pick out that they're two different minerals or three different minerals?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's good. Now, how would you describe the way they're put together, those minerals? Could you think of a way to describe that?
By heat?
Well, no, not even how they form, just looking at them. How would you describe to someone how they're, like, attached to each other?
They almost look like they're cemented together.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't want to say exactly that, but they look like they all run right into the next one. There's no open space between the minerals. Okay, so you might say here's a grain, here's another grain, mm-hmm. And there's a little bi-type there. Okay, does it look something like this the way I've drawn it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Now this is a texture of an igneous rock. And there are other kinds of, actually, rocks that have the same texture. But this particular igneous rock, granite, has this kind of texture where the minerals just grow right into each other. Okay? So, we have a name for that. We call that interlocking. So look at that. Think of the igneous rocks form from cooling from hot rock, from molten rock, from what we call a magma. We might think of lava. Okay. Now I'm going to pass around another set of igneous rocks, and I want you to tell me compare the texture, really. Now some of you will have pink rocks, and some of you will have black rocks, but they're all igneous rocks too. Okay? So take a rock and pass it around. Now, have you all gotten one of those? Now, this is it's an igneous rock, too, and the pink ones are exactly the same composition as granite. So they're made of the same minerals. So, is it Jack?
Herb.
What? How do you describe the difference in just looking at it in the granite and that pink rock?
Well, it doesn't have the same shine, no sheen to it.
Right, and can you pick out individual minerals in that?
Finer grain.
Yeah.
Right, okay, it's finer grain. That's a really critical and key observation. So just looking at these two, if you compare them, one's fine grain, sometimes you can't even see minerals in it, and some are coarse grain. Now, that's an observation that you can make. You can look at these rocks and say, I can see minerals in one and I don't see minerals in the other. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's important because it tells you something about how that rock formed. That they are both igneous rocks, so they both formed when hot rock or magma cooled and minerals grew from that. But one formed when it cooled like a mile or 2 miles or maybe even 3 miles even more below the surface of the earth, where the minerals had time to grow to a larger size. And that's the granite. So that cools slowly and at great depths. Okay, the other rock, the light colored pink or the black rock, which is really fine grain, cooled really pretty quickly, so the minerals didn't have time to grow to a large size at all. Okay,
question? Well, how could it be that they don't have spaces in between? They had to grow.
Well, they started out probably, say this is all liquid right now.
Yeah.
Okay, then a certain mineral starts to grow. It starts at some center point, and it grows outward from that. Okay, and say over here, another mineral starts to grow. Okay, now as time goes on, those continue to grow to be larger and larger. And then other minerals start to form too, and they grow and they grow until they're larger. And they just keep growing until they run into another mineral, and then they stop growing.
So they're confined by space or dry?
Mainly space. And then by the time, well, it's both really, by the time you run out of space, there's no more liquid left. This is simplifying things a bit, but that's basically it.
Okay.
Okay. Now I want you to contrast this kind of texture with the sample I'm going to pass around next. And I think you'll, even just feeling it, it's going to feel different.
Is it possible to melt granite and bring it back to a liquid form?
Mm-hmm. And that's what they do in a lot of experimental labs. We'll do that. In fact, very early on in the, even in the, I think the late 1700s or maybe early 1800s, geologists were starting to see that. They would melt a rock and then cool it under different conditions to try to figure out what those textures meant. You know, cool it really quickly or cool it slowly.
Is this a theory that the mountains are growing taller and taller every month?
Not exactly.
Not exactly.
Yeah, I'll talk about that in another session about mountains.
So when you say grow, that's different than when you talk about a plant growing.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. We're just saying it gets larger.
Right. It's just kind of bizarre.
Yeah, well, geologists are kind of bizarre.
What are you talking about, millions of years or thousands of years? Or?
Probably for granite, you could say would cool if you had a big granite intrusion, it might cool in automatically. Say 10,000, 100,000 years, something like that. Lava in lava lakes cools a lot faster, you know, maybe in hours or days, and it hardens.
Like Mount St. Helens?
Yeah. So that was pretty cooled pretty quickly, the material from there. Okay, look at this, and I heard somebody say what it is.
Sandstone.
Okay, now, You figured that out because the sand comes off and it feels like sand in your hands. But look at the texture of that and see, and look at it with the hand lens too. And you'll see a really different texture. It looks like little round grains and they're all cemented together. sometimes it helps to look at it with a hand lens. You'll see just little sand things.
Are those quartz crystals?
Right. And those are quartz grains. And think of how this rock formed. These grains had to come from somewhere else. So there was some other source rock somewhere. It could have been a granite. And it got broken down into littler pieces. And those pieces maybe got tumbled in a stream, or blown by wind, or carried by glaciers, and the surfaces got smoother. And then somewhere they were deposited, like in a riverbank, in the ocean, on the beach, someplace like that. And then they got cemented together. Okay. Now, so now you've learned about two kinds of main groups of rocks. Igneous rocks, the ones that form from cooling from hot rock, and sedimentary rocks, the ones that are formed by weathering and breakdown of some pre-existing rock.
Can you tell us what the temperature would be to melt granite?
Granite would probably melt at, say, 700 degrees centigrade, about. The black rock you have, some of you have, is a rock that's a different composition, and that rock cools at much higher temperatures, at say 1,000 degrees centigrade, maybe 1,100 degrees centigrade. And that fine-grained dark rock is what the ocean floors are made of. So when you have lava coming out in the ocean, or like in Iceland or Hawaii, that would be that kind of rock. So it's a higher temperature. Okay, so they're igneous rocks, sedimentary rocks, and another rock type that you really need to know about because you find it around here is a rock that's conceptually, I think, is harder to understand how it forms, but it's called a metamorphic rock, which means a change in form. And I didn't bring lots of samples of this because actually, my department doesn't have lots of samples of this rock, which is a great rock, which I will pass around. I want you all to see this. But it's a rock, and you can see that it's layered. Mm-hmm. And they're dark colors and light colors. And if you haven't seen these, just walking around the village, look at them. And there are a lot of samples of this, you know, just right around. And you'll see alternating bands of dark colors and light colors. And this is such a great rock. I'm sure Dan can think of a joke about this. It's spelled G-N-E-I-S-S, and it's pronounced
nice.
A nice. So you say, this is a nice rock, you know? And you mean two things, actually. It's real pretty looking, and also it's a metamorphic rock. And these rocks form when you have lots of pressure, and that high pressure and high temperature acts on either igneous rocks or sedimentary rocks and causes them to change form. So you might, that rock that you're looking at might have started as a granite. I don't know. And it has those same minerals. It's got quartz and feldspar, but they're arranged differently. They're in real distinct layers. And one way that I think that helps me sort of envision how this might take place, how this layering can form, is imagine that you have tiny flakes of mica and put it in Play-Doh. So here's Play-Doh, and then there are mica flakes at all different angles. And if you put a lot of pressure on that, and this actually works, believe it or not, you just mash it together. What happens is that the mica flakes align up parallel, or actually perpendicular to the pressure. So they all line up parallel to each other. And in a way, that's what's happening with metamorphic rocks, that the minerals recrystallize, and they change form, and they sort of change orientation, and they become stacked one on top of each other. Okay? So I just mentioned that because that's something that you'll see around here.
You find those in faults, like earthquake faults?
Sometimes you can, but what you really find them in is in cores of mountains. Like if you look at a mountain, a lot of mountains. Well, the weight of the overlying rock and also the heat of what's going on at that depth causes the rocks that were there first to change form
and become different kinds of metamorphic rocks. And a kind of metamorphic rock you probably all know about is marble. And that forms from limestone actually, in a way, being baked. So it's subjected to higher temperatures, and it recrystallizes without melting. And that, to me, is a really weird thing that takes place. It doesn't actually melt, but it just changes its form and becomes those nice crystalline marble that you see.
Could you tell us what makes the long fissures that run up through the system either white or black at most of them?
Yeah. Those, a lot of times those are what you call veins of either calcite or quartz. I don't know what they are here. And it happens when there's some pressure or stress on the rock and it causes it to break. And then later solutions like watery solutions that move through the rock would precipitate the minerals that fill in those. But that's really important. And that's an observation that you make. And then you say, well, what does that mean? And it tells us something happened after the rock was formed to break it apart and then to fill in those fractures. And that's the kind of, thing that geologists do all the time, is look and try to answer those questions.
How long would it take for that fissure of a rock to form in there after it broken and then it began to fill in? Do you have any idea about
that? That I'd say, guessing on this, but maybe the order of months or years. Those are good questions. I just don't know. You think longer than that?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. How would you say? Hundreds, millions?
Well, there's a lot of these up here that you've been giving us. They're probably 10 to 15 million years old.
No, he's talking about the fractures of
the
rocks.
Right. You can see fractures along the highway in various locations in the country where the earth has moved and pushed up, and it was an uneven pressure, and the rock twisted. And you can see this metamorphic condition of rocks that are at a definite slope as much as 20 degrees going up in different colors, just like what you have described here and the sample that you passed around. Only gigantic.
Yeah. Okay. One last thing, and then I want to show you some slides. I just brought in a couple last things to show you that you probably use minerals every day, and you may not be really aware of this, but one is if you've ever used a baby powder, and think of why you'd use it. You'd use it because it's really soft. So there's a mineral that's called talc. And I'll just pass samples of that around. And you can feel that. You can use your fingernail and kind of scrape it off and scrape little tiny pieces. And it will be just like the talc that you use in a baby powder. The other thing I want you to do, and this is the last thing with the hand lens, and I also have some little microscopes. But I think you can see with the hand lens. I think that too many people pass this around. Remember what that halite looked like, that rock salt? Little cubes? Okay, take a little bit of salt and look at it in your hands and see if you can recognize cubes. And I think you will. Some of it, they're a little bit rounded. But just pass that around. Here,
it's like sand.
Yeah, but look at that. That actually is from a metamorphic rock.
Who's this called?
It's pretty hard. You have to look around there.
Yeah. Okay, so did you see any tiny cubes?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's again reflecting the internal structure of that halite, that even on a large scale you saw those cubes, that's still kept in terms of the small scale, just the salt that you see.
Yeah.
Excuse me, talc, isn't it? That's not a mineral?
Yeah, talc is a mineral.
It's a mineral.
And it comes, the samples I'm passing around are actually a rock.
How's it made?
It's a kind of, it's a metamorphic rock.
Even though you can't see the layers very easily.
One of the samples I'm passing around hasn't been touched by as many people, and you can still see layers.
And it's layers of what?
The mineral talc. So it's like you just have, sometimes you get rocks that are almost all mica, and their micas are stacked right on top of each other.
And that's just a mineral.
Yeah. In fact, that's a sample. Did you see how you can see them? And that's an indication that it formed under pressure, and those kind of plating minerals all lined up right on top of each other.
Okay.
This
is a whole new world.
What's borax? Is that a mineral itself?
I think so. It's an evaporite mineral similar to.
Well, they mine it, don't they? Dig it out.
Yeah, like in Death Valley.
20
mules. Death Valley.
It's salt.
Okay.
Heather?
Uh-huh.
Does salt always come in big crystals and they just grind it up to get table salt? Or make smaller crystals?
I don't really know how they make it. I assume there are a lot of evaporation ponds, and it believe me, it doesn't always look like this. I have samples of salt that just look like white coatings kind of on a rock. So these are the samples that we use to talk about the way it breaks and things like that.
In Michigan, they mine the salts.
There are a lot of salts.
Like here from Port Huron and
down in Utah.
Syracuse or Onondaga Lake was just all salt flats.
That was where Morton's, there. It rains of pores.
Yeah.
What about the talcum powder? Has aluminum been added to that? I've read where they shouldn't use talcum powder on babies now because there's aluminum content in there somehow.
Yeah, see, I don't know anything
deodorant
about that.
Deodorants, too.
Look,
every type of deodorant.
That's
what makes
it.
Well, some deodorant.
There's some deodorant that doesn't. No. Yes.
You want this back?
Oh, yeah, dead away from me.
Okay. Now you're going to have to move because I'm going to show you some slides of. Okay, now the way this first part is just a quick review, and then I'm going to show you yet another way that geologists look at rocks. Now, I'm not sure. Okay. Now, if you look at this, you should recognize two different minerals. C1, or at least two. C1s that are sort of grayish. Actually, maybe I stand back. Can you pass this around? Okay, so look at like this. See that? And that, and that. This might help you if you have time. You can go back and look at your samples. That's the mineral that breaks really regularly. That's quartz. And this pink mineral is a kind of feldspar. And there may be a few glass specks you can see that are biotite. So if you have quartz and feldspar, it's going to be what? Granite.
Right.
That's a granite. And the texture tells you it cooled slowly. It cooled, because it's an igneous rock, it cooled slowly at some depth below the surface. So if you see it on the surface now, if you see it walking around Holden or something with this texture, you know that the overlying rock's been removed, that it has come up. So that's an igneous rock. This is an example of a sedimentary rock with much the same composition. There are feldspar grains and also some quartz grains in this, but they're just like little pieces all stuck together. And that formed by weathering from some other rock and then accumulating there. And then this is an example of a third type of metamorphic rock. And this is a gneiss. Okay, this is a gneiss rock. It looks beautiful. And also because you can see bands of light and dark colored minerals. Now just for the sake of it being kind of inclusive, this is another metamorphic rock. This is a marble, and you don't see any layers in it. Marbles don't have to have layers like some other metamorphic rocks do. And I'm really not going to go through this. This is just saying all these rocks are related to each other. If you start with an igneous rock, you can weather it, form sediments, or you can heat it up and change it to a metamorphic rock. And there are lots of ways that these rocks connect together. This is not really shown too well. What you've seen is how we look at rocks like in the field. We look at them just, you know, with unaided eye. We take hand lenses with us and look at them under slight magnification. Another way that we study rocks, another way to look at them, is to cut them open. And what we do is, this is a saw. This is a diamond bladed little diamond. It's on the edges, so it's very hard and it can cut rocks. So you put a rock here and it would feed down as this is rotating and would actually cut the rock open. And here's another view of, sometimes you want to cut it into a certain size. This is just another kind of saw. Close up of one of those. What we do with that, then we have little rock chips. And you see these some small chips of rocks, and we glue them onto glass slides. Glue meaning not exactly glue, but attach them. And then we cut most of the rock off and try to grind it down so we have cut it so there's only a real thin section of the rock attached to the glass slide. We call that a thin section. And here's the chip that was cut off, and you can barely see this, but I think you can pick it out. Here's the thin section. So it's clear now. Now, that's just amazing to me, that you can take a rock, and I have a sample of this rock later afterwards you can look at it. It's silvery, it's really a pretty rock, but it doesn't look clear. But we slice it so they're really thin, 30 microns, like vaguely, you know, just a sheet of paper, so it's really thin. And you grind it using a polishing wheel or a grinding wheel until it is that thin. And then what we do is, well, and this is showing the different stages. Here's what it looked like at first. Here it's a little bit thinner, and here it's very thin. Now I'm going to run through, and I picked sedimentary rocks first because I have better slides of these. This is a thin section, so this is maybe a couple inches. And this is a sandstone. And it's pretty clear, you see some specks in it. Okay, now what we do is look at it under a kind of microscope that's called a petrographic microscope, but that name doesn't really matter. But we magnify it a lot. And this is what that clear slide looks like. So what you can really see is the individual grains of sediment, and they're all cemented together. Okay, and that's a texture that is very characteristic of some sedimentary rocks, not all, but some. So you have sand, it's like sand grains, like that sandstone that you passed around, it would look like this. Now what is so cool, and I wish I could have brought one of these microscopes, but they're way too heavy and very, very expensive. They're polarizing microscopes, and the light is starting at the base, it's coming up, it's coming up through these minerals, and then you look at it. What we can do is put in another plate, let's just call it, that changes the way the light moves. And we do that so we have another way to look at the different minerals. And when we put this polarizing plate in, this is going to be the same view. So it would be, if you were looking down the microscope, this is what you'd see. Now just keep that in mind, and imagine I'm putting a plate in, and this is what you get. So now, some minerals still look exactly the same. They're still that white color. But others are darker.
So depending on the way the light hits it?
Is that what you're saying? Yeah. And I can explain it, but I want to show all the slides and I don't want to run out of time. So talk to me after the session, because it's really interesting. It's so neat to do this. And it has to do with the properties of the minerals. Mm-hmm. What happens when the light goes through this, when you put this polarizing plate in. Now different minerals respond differently. And this is showing quartz, it's really clear. And both of these that have a different kind of fabric are feldspars. So it's a way that you can really, really get at what the composition of the material is. And you can see, I mean, and that tells you something about the rock that the sediments came from. So this is just another rock. And you can again pick out some areas of quartz grains and then some of these other feldspar grains, because they have different, they respond differently. Now let's shift gears and look at igneous rocks and look at their texture. So you remember that texture of the sedimentary rocks? And this is a thin section on a granite. And again, think of what a granite looks like. And now it's sliced so thin, it's almost all clear. There are few flakes of something else, but mineral. Okay. And this is what it looks like in that polarized light. And looking at this, you can pick out, well, here's a feldspar. It's got that kind of a plaid-like texture. And then, you know, here's a quartz grain. But you look at it for the composition, but also for the way the grains are attached together. They just grow or enlarge until they run into another grain. There aren't those sort of spaces between the round particles like you saw in the sedimentary rocks. Now this I brought because this is from a rock from the state of Washington. And this is a rock called andesite, and it's from Mount St. Helens. So when Mount St. Helens erupted, somebody took a sample of the rock and made a thin section of it, and this is what you see. And compared to the granite, see how these are both the same scale. These are pretty large mineral grains, okay? Now look at what you see in this slide. See, they're a lot smaller. There's some that are large, but lots that are real tiny. So if you looked at this, you'd see maybe a few of those large grains when you looked at the hand sample, but it would look really fine grained. You wouldn't be able to identify different minerals. And that makes sense because it formed, you know, near at the Earth's surface. And let me skip that. Okay, this is a thin section of a metamorphic rock. And oh, this is really wonderful. It's such a beautiful rock, and it looks so neat under the microscope. So Stinky, just looking at it, you can get a sense of layers. Can you see that? So you see these things are layered. The red minerals are garnets. Now I'll show you two shots of this, one in plain light. And this is what it looks like. You see the garnet still, but everything else is just kind of white. Now this is so neat. This is so neat what it looks like. Oh, no. This is in plain light still. Okay? So the next slide is exactly the same image. Look, you've got these gorgeous colors.
Oh, wow.
Well, it is, and these microscopes are so neat when they show you this. It's really a different way of looking at the minerals, and I think aesthetically it's really neat looking, but it also, you have to remember why we do this. We do it not just because it looks neat, but because we can identify the different minerals this way in a way that sometimes you can't do just by looking at it with your eyes. And these really bright colors, the ones that are, see how they're platy? Mm-hmm. Like this? They have kind of a speckly texture that's different from that of the quartz down here. And that's really characteristic of different kinds of mica. And again, it's tying into what is the underlying structure of these minerals. The micas were flat sheets, so you're looking at the side of a flat sheet here. And that relates to how they, the atoms are put together in those minerals.
Are you doing any staining, or is that just a different way of the light?
It's just, it has to do with the way the light moves through the different minerals.
What kind of light is it that the polarizing has?
Actually, I don't know. But it changes it so you're seeing these different colors. And some minerals have exhibit these colors, and like quartz doesn't. Micas do, other kinds of minerals do. And if you go on and study these, you learn the characteristics, like what colors you might expect to see in plain light and in polarized light, what happens when you rotate the stage. Like the garnets are always black under these conditions, and they don't change at all. So you learn all those different characteristics, and that would help you in identifying the minerals, and that would help you in figuring out the history of that particular rock. Okay, now this is my last slide, and it's from a New Yorker cartoon. And what I hope that you get from this session is something about what different, I'll read it. I still don't have all the answers, but I'm beginning to ask the right questions. And I think it's really important that each of you know something about what the rocks are like. And you've learned that even if you never came to this session, you could say something about what you see. But what you really want to do is go beyond that and start to ask questions about that. Is what does it mean? What does it tell us about the history of this area? There are lots of questions that you can ask. And believe me, the more you study geology, the more questions that you have in trying to really understand what's going on. So I think that's, I'll close here, but I can answer questions, and you can look at more samples if you like.
How many thin sections are broken as you make them?
I'm not very good at making thin sections, but they're not tremendously hard to make okay ones. It's hard for me to make good ones. And you don't really break too many.
This just has talcum fragments.
Yeah.
Where do crystals get the material to grow? You said it grow and grow. Where do they get the material?
Well, you start with a solution.
Okay.
That, and say like a quartz crystal.
Yeah, it has all these atoms in it.
Right. It would be watery, say. There'd be water in it, but there would be some silicon atoms or ions and oxygen, and probably some other, there could be other things as well. And then it just starts to...
It's like an attraction.
Maybe a better example is if you had a salt water solution, and the salt's all dissolved. And then if you put like a seed crystal in that, like hang it from a string or something, then it starts to grow, and those, in a way, those atoms attach themselves on to the surface of that initial thing, the nucleus. So when you're dealing with rocks, it's not quite as simple as that, because that's just a solution of salt,
right?
And that's all that's in it. When you have hot rock, like a magma, it would have a lot of silicon, oxygen, iron, magnesium, aluminum, potassium, sodium, calcium, probably all of those in it. And when it starts to cool, different minerals start to form at different temperatures. And actually that's really interesting too, because you can relate it back to the texture, that the minerals that say tend to form earlier may have more regular shapes. And when they're like, you know, finished building, then minerals that are stable at cooler temperature, lower temperatures, start to form. And those kind of fill in the empty spaces. And you really can see that in some granites, that the feldspars may have more regular shapes, and the quartz, which is one of the last minerals to form, would just fill in those empty spaces. So there's a lot you can get by just looking at the texture and the fabric of different rocks that can tell you something about the history of that.
Then I was just going to say, that's what I find so exciting about geology. It gets me really excited is that you can take contain myself, but every time you look at a rock, think of it as a storybook.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't form just in one sort of, it has a whole history. And the more you start learning how to read that book, it starts unfolding this beautiful history of where it's been and what's happened to it. Uh-huh.
Oh, and that's why there are some really neat samples in the rocks around here that you can see there. There's one rock, and then there are pieces of another rock included in that. And then if they've been rounded by, you know, some other process, you really can just, like Dan said, build up a story. And that's like so exciting. And you can do it anywhere. Even in cities, you can go and look at building stones. I mean, I always like to look at the building stones, or you go to big fancy department stores and they've got gorgeous walls, and I always go up and look at them.
Even cemeteries.
Oh yeah, I love cemeteries. So
what will you be doing your next class?
The next class will be in a way a continuation of that, and we'll walk around outside and look at rocks and try to put together as a group some of these stories. So we'll start with identifying, you know, what you can see in the rocks, and then what does that mean.
Is that tomorrow?
That'll be tomorrow at 2:00, and we'll meet by the bell. So hope you enjoy this and can come.
Thank you.
Thanks for
Thank you.